nobody really knows how to do it. Everyone thinks everybody else is doing it, so everyone claims they're doing it. But what the heck is made of advertising? Welcome to the PhD podcast from PhD Australia. Join me, lovely Stuart.
Hello.
Christian.
Hello.
And lovely Lauren.
Hello.
So, guys, this podcast was prompted this week by this week's events at HBO, all the way over in the States, where host John Oliver launched into a tirade against native advertising, arguing that this trendy, supposedly new marketing practice is corrupting news and media. We're going to talk about that in a little minute, but first, it's a very hotly contested topic these days. I would love to know, what is your definition of native advertising? Stuart, I'm going to start with you, as you look the most excited.
I have
no idea, though. I literally don't know. I think,
isn't it just an advertorial?
Like, I think so as well.
I'm still a bit, it feels like it's like a trendy word around something that's very old school.
It's the online version of of this, yes.
Yeah, but previously we've called editorials online as well, so it's a bit weird now. It's like
it's
fluffy word.
Yeah, I'll jump in and give my opinion now.
Give an actual thing.
No.
Considering
the
fact that you didn't.
It's my perception. It's totally my opinion. But I completely agree that native advertising and how what we're calling it today is essentially what's always been around in different formats. I think it's just getting slightly sneakier or more integrated / native, which is why they're calling it native advertising. I think that there's still always a bit of a call to action or a note that says this is advertising or this is a paid for element. I just think it's getting harder and harder to notice. And I think that's not only because it's not like that kind of notification is going away. It's there. I think that the content that is being produced is becoming even more like what the
And
I think that's a combination of brands being more open to developing more content that is content rather than
straight on advertising.
And I think it's also a bit of marketers relying on the actual editorial team or the teams at these publications to do the development of the content, and therefore.
Sure.
It's getting harder to identify that, but it's still kind of very similar just in native advertising. It's just the online version of editorials and things that we've had in the past.
Because from my experience, magazine editorial staff would always create editorial anyway from a lot of stuff that
I've
seen.
Is it the Emperor's New Clothes? Is it just
a
case of the Emperor's New Clothes? That just happens to be the trendy buzzword we're hearing at the moment.
I think what's interesting, and I think that they talk about that in the HBO thing, is around kind of the church and state thing, and it is the erosion, the potential erosion, which is kind of causing the uproar of trust and actually the boundaries between editorial integrity and money and advertising. Right?
But then, again, it raises the question, I think, and this is what's not clear about native advertising, is that who's actually the owner of that particular content. So essentially what native advertising is just a marketing message in the disguise of editorial content, basically.
Thank you for defining it, because we've got 5 minutes in and we have
I disagree. The language of disguise implies that it's about hiding stuff, and I don't necessarily think it is. Yes, some of it, bad examples of advertorial / native advertising are about trying to dupe the consumer, but that's not the best example.
You don't think
this
it's
really
disingenuous. You don't think they're trying to. I think the intent is the important thing. You know, are they trying to cloak it under the guise of, you know, making you think that you're actually reading an editorial piece when in actual fact it's an ad, and they're trying to hide that from you? Or are you in agreement that it should be very blatant, very obviously something that is paid for by a
trust
brand?
Is so important. I can't imagine any advertiser undermining the trust and that relationship they have with consumers because they think
being
they can,
clumsy.
Will pull one
yeah.
over on them. Like yeah. You see it time and time again in any kind of equity tracker or any kind of work that quantifies the relationships that consumers have with brands. Trust and brand I love as part of that are the biggest drivers of intent of purchase typically. So how
why would they undermine their
why would they undermine that? It doesn't make any sense. So I don't think it's about that. And if an advertiser is trying to hide their message in a very clumsy way to via an editorial, then I just don't think that's particularly useful.
But I think this is why it's a big question: what is actually native advertising? So how the definition of by a definition, who's actually creating that particular content? Because many times it's. I think what the perception is that, yes, it's marketing teams or creative agencies or whoever who just push that content out there and then put it in the context of that particular environment, and then it feels like it's these guys. But actually what happens or what should be happening is that those editors who are anyway working in these, I don't know, news portals or wherever it happens, is basically they are the ones who are giving their names, their IP, their style, their tone of voice to advertising, and then it actually becomes something useful and also not only perceived useful from the consumer's perspective, but also it's basically something that the advertisers are striving to do is to talk consumer language as opposed to a creative agency or the team itself writing a piece and putting it in front of them.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, can you've watched the John Oliver piece? Tell me what you thought. Do you think he was making? Because I've read a couple of articles which people are basically taking a shot at him, saying that he was taking some cheap shots and it was kind of setting up a straw man and whatever. What did you think of his arguments? And can you just articulate what his basic beef with Native was?
I think it was about the separation of church and state in terms of. Some things should stay separate, and I think that was the kind of the key point that I took from it. I agree.
I don't think anybody could really disagree with that.
I think it's
he took a couple of cheap shots. I thought at things
yeah,
like
BuzzFeed, yeah.
which I think do this really well.
Well, I don't think
they
do. I just don't understand that.
I think somebody. I agree with Angela that BuzzFeed does it well because it's different.
It's
then
so obvious advertising. Like it says, this is created by a brand. Like it's got the actual logo.
But yeah, but so does everything
so
else.
So does everything else.
Why
that's the whole
not
definition
just sponsorship
of it.
Or just.
It's a bit like the Robin Thicke. It's lots of blurred lines going on.
Yeah.
I think the BuzzFeed. There's an article in BuzzFeed today which is 12 classic albums everyone needs to hear. Right.
Yeah.
And it's sponsored by Bose. Right. Headset people.
Yeah.
Now. That to me has a lot of utility. If you're into music, that's an article I would read anyway.
Yeah.
And it happens to be sponsored by them, but I think it's informative, it's educational, it's fun, it's something that is of use. And I think that's the classic. That's a classic
that,
piece of name.
Why is that native advertising versus just being advertising though? What makes it native?
Because it's written in the
BuzzFeed style,
in the BuzzFeed style. It's not written as from a marketeer's perspective. It's written by the BuzzFeed journals in their style.
So go back to the advertorial thing. Why isn't advertorial not... Is that still native advertising?
I think depending on who you're talking to, I think people conflate sponsored,
right.
advertorial, native, even branded content, which I would define as being different. And it's all about the kind of the messaging and the intent. So I think with native, it's quite about the call to action. It's quite obvious what they're trying to do. It's more of a salesy thing. Whereas with maybe integrated content marketing or branded content, the intent is to establish a better, deeper relationship with a brand, not just to sell you something right there and then.
Really?
I think. I mean,
so
it's very murky. It's very
that.
Murky. Of course you would.
No, but like, how can... So seeing the Bose... little tiny, not even 5 pixel big
sponsored
on BuzzFeed. How is that trying to sell you something versus trying to not develop an integrated relationship with a consumer? Because it's got the logo?
I have to say, I agree with you on this one.
So you're thinking that's more a branded content piece than
any advertiser.
In native advertising, in like properly, nicely done native advertising that's not too intrusive is actually beneficial for me as a reader of that piece. I've never seen that it costs this much. It costs $10 and I want you to buy it now. it was always about something that I would be interested in just because of actually reading that news article or that particular that news site.
And that's like I was going to talk about, you know, what do you see as being the benefits to this particular kind of advertising? Are there benefits? Why do you think this is...
Well, I think absolutely it's about getting kind of long form stories and messages out there to consumers in a way that they will respond better to, because it's environments and using language and context of which they're familiar with. The other thing I was going to just say in terms of your point around content being like almost more subtle, I kind of disagree with that as well, because I mean the role for advertising, it's still very specific. It's about selling stuff typically, and the best way to sell stuff is to align content with the brand. So if you're hiding your brand in content, what is the point in doing it? What is that going to do for your branded sales? Very little. So I think that's a counterintuitive argument for content. I would expect content you produce to absolutely be as branded as you need it to be in order to deliver whatever your marketing objectives are. So.
Fair enough. I think that's almost like a separate discussion that we should have another time.
Oh, let's do that next week.
So fascinating. But just to go back to the native advertising, why do you think we have now come to a stage where this is what we're talking about? Why have we reached a point where native is seen to be the way forward?
I frankly have absolutely no idea.
I agree.
Well, I think from an online perspective, it's probably a contribution from like banner blindness, where there's
totally.
and I think an overall
the efficacy of digital display ads and banners.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And not just that.
I actually thought
you
meant banners making people blind.
No. So,
what? That sounds serious.
Flashing banners.
Flashing. The first AT&T ad to ever go live was 44? A big flashing,
yeah.
Big flashing
awesome.
GIF.
Didn't it have a massive click through rate as well? It had something like a 44.
Well, yeah, it was
click
the first ad. Like, what does this do? Like, hey, that's cool. I actually have no idea where I was. Oh, banner blindness.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's not just from an online perspective. I think it's also, you know, because we're talking about news, print news is a lot of the examples that print or / digital news is what the examples that John Oliver gave. And I think going back to the point about church and state and going back to kind of why this is coming up is that we as advertisers and marketers are trying to find a way to get more noticed by the consumer, or to have our ads engaged by the consumer, and our traditional here's the editorial, here's my advertising spot gets, I think, skipped over a lot. I mean, you've got not only in the mediums that we've just been talking about, but you've got, you know, the ability to do personal video recording or DVR or however, set-top box recording, and then fast forward through the TV conceits. So people are trying to find ways even there to try to cut through and oppose what is the natural consumer behavior at the moment to avoid advertising.
Yeah.
So I think these are just responses for us in how we're trying to address those things. Not necessarily always well executed, and not
it's a response to the situation.
It's a response to the situation to try to continually connect with the consumer when they're disengaging from the traditional ways that we've been using.
Nothing's going to change in that respect. I think this is just one of the many forms of brands trying to talk differently to consumers, because everything has changed. The whole world's
But not out. Even not even as a reactive thing. Like, context is king, right? So your message in the right context will always resonate better. And that's always been, that's a truism of of the market.
But it's not
the
always been executed that
exactly.
way. So I think it's the shift of people, more people realizing that, more people trying to integrate, more people trying to be relevant.
Well, you say that, but it's just an evolution of that thought. So whereas previously I would have put my favourite example, actually, in the UK, when I used to work on a large FMCG brand that had some pharmaceutical stuff, and it was all about kind of erectile dysfunction, I think it was. Our editorial strategy was put it next to a phallic-shaped editorial. So we'd have this ad, like this kind of full-page colour ad, next to kind of like sausage recipes and things like that. So anyway, just
very subliminal,
so,
very cerebral.
That for me was my favourite strategy ever implemented.
But it's even true when it comes to old school advertising. You place your ads beside programs that resonate, your ads will have more impact. So it's the same thing.
Context is still king, and it's just an evolution for me. not necessarily a reaction to some blindness or to ad avoidance. It's an evolution given more utility and ways of being able to kind of capitalise on that.
And also, I think there's a need from the publisher's side. You know, they ain't making that much money
from advertisers anymore, so how else?
And that's a function of us as consumers switching away from... I mean, nobody wants to pay for anything these days.
Mm.
So I kind of understand why they're going down these roads. I mean, they've come under a lot of flack for accepting dirty money for native advertising.
Yeah.
But then if you're facing, like, oblivion because your sales have gone down to Swanee and, you know, that there aren't that many options...
Yeah, it's an interesting question where actually editorships draw the line. So if there's something that absolutely, they know that it's like so alien, so foreign for the context in itself, that they would still do it, because then it becomes bad, then it backfires. But it also backfires on the editorship, it backfires on the advertiser as well, so then it becomes forced and useless basically.
Have there been any examples that you've come across in your lengthy study and research for this piece, that you found particularly interesting? Have you seen anything that you thought was well executed, interesting?
So I just thought about it now, actually, now that our definition keeps evolving of what this thing is.
Like,
my favourite example probably will be of, I know this is not a digital example, mm-hmm. but of Delia Smith when she released a cookbook.
Yeah.
And she partnered with Waitrose?
Waitrose.
And she literally had all these recipes. And Delia Smith, for those who don't know, is a UK chef, cook, very, very famous. And she literally released a cheats cookbook. And in it was like, go to Waitrose and buy this. Like, it was literally obvious. It was commercially funded by Waitrose, but it was her actual book with just some little snippets of driving into sales. And they called it the Delia effect, because like almost everything in that cookbook sold out within minutes. So
use vanilla extract. Excellent.
Yeah.
Waitrose
is the best. Like, so for me, that's probably the best example, as long as you're not duping people. And I think there was a little bit of backlash in that example of people going, whoa, that's a bit of an unfair thing. But I mean, as long as you've kind of said it up front, sponsored by Waitrose.
Just on the Waitrose thing, Waitrose Kitchen, which is the magazine that they produce... and the online content. Apparently, readers of this online content and the magazine spend 5 times more in store than those who don't read it. I mean, that's colossal. It's obviously a really effective tool. And they obviously...
Well, that's causation versus correlation.
Oh, Stuart, do we have to be so pedantic?
They may just be heavy users of Waitrose who happen to read the magazine in store. Just saying.
That's fine. You just say... But what about you, Lauren? Did you come across anything that you found interesting?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that were mentioned, which I never thought of. I mean, to your point about the cookbook, actually, somebody, I think the last article you sent around actually mentioned Betty Crocker as a great example. Like, but I don't think that's necessarily native advertising. I would consider that more content.
Also, there's a difference. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
believe that?
I
think so, but you shouted me down earlier on.
Well, I don't believe. Do we believe Christian? What do you think?
I think in the instance, I think if there's a very fine line, and you could probably argue both ways, and it would make sense both ways. But I would say that the Betty Crocker cookbook is a piece of content in and of itself without being reliant on any other media outlet, and therefore its content. And very more specific content for me. So it probably gets a bit hairier when you start to think of it as, okay, I've partnered with a publisher or a newspaper or whatever to collaborate and make that.
Yeah.
But if I'm Betty Crocker and I just put out my own cookbook as a marketing brand, that's my content. I don't consider that native advertising because I'm not advertising natively inside any other publication other than my content.
Absolutely, that's just like saying a magazine that's been published is a magazine, which it is.
Yeah, but also
but the advertorial inside that is not published. It's not because it's not the publisher.
But the publisher can write it and make it and produce it.
But the publisher doesn't own the brand, so it's not.
So you're talking, it's ownership of brand that makes no. Because
well,
so what about branded content then? So are you saying
that's what I'm saying.
But then, so
the Betty Crocker stuff would be branded content.
But if for any piece of content that we produce for any of our brands or clients we work on,
Well, this is what I told you. It could be argued very many ways, and that's why
I consider it. So content is a much bigger, broader thing, and I think native advertising, yes, is. I think it can be one bucket within content.
Yes.
So it's a subsection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Division. Yeah.
But not
sure.
Separate thing. I don't think they're two separate constructs.
Yeah, but they're different, ish.
Well, in the sense that a TVC is still content,
no,
but different from an integrated online webisode.
And
yes.
That is a whole different and interesting topic that we should get into.
All right,
into
so the next 20 minutes come
yes.
from Angela talking
about it. No, I think actually, so in some of the comments from John Oliver, I think Gemma Hunter, head of Mediacom's brand advertising, beyond advertising, sorry, she said my favourite thing out of all of this, which is... the whole thing for me is the whole term native ads is absolute bollocks. We should be talking about content marketing, which I think is where we get to the same thing. It's that it is how we should use content marketing. And content marketing absolutely is a massive opportunity for brands to do all the things we've just said, not under the guise of native advertising. I think
mm-hmm.
if any of our clients came to us and said, we want to do native advertising, I think we would go,
dissuade them.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
You probably want to do some content, equity measures, something else. And that would be the conversation that I would actively have.
I don't think any of us around this table would ever argue against us trying to persuade clients to not necessarily move all of their monies away from traditional advertising, but certainly...
Well, I'm sure you would.
I would be happy if that were the case. But I think, you know, from a media agency point of view, of course we want to engage and get our clients to engage with consumers in different ways,
yeah.
because that's the way the whole industry is going. So nobody around this table is going to say content is blocks
yeah.
or any other thing that we might do for our clients blocks, because we would never see.
No, absolutely. But digital, native advertising may be blocks.
And on that note, I think that was a very eloquent way of finishing this discussion. Part 2 coming up very soon, I'm sure. But on that note, I think we'll leave it for there. Thank you so much, Stuart, for that wonderful epitaph.
Thank you.
Can we actually say that? Are we allowed? Oh, it's Australia. You get away with so much more. this is not the BBC. We're right here. Thank you to Lauren.
Bye.
Thank you to Christian.
Bye.
And thank you. This has been Andrew Rapley and our merry gang of PhD Podcast Services. See you soon.
Bye.
To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus @PhD Australia.